like to introduce our first speaker. His name is George L., and he is from York, PA area.
George.
My name is George, and I'm an addict. And I'm clean by God's grace and mercy, and that's a statement that I don't make nor take very lightly. I am excited. You know, I mean, for the first time in a long time, I'm excited to do something like this. And because I've done this a few times, and it becomes a struggle. It becomes a battle within myself over whether if I'm doing this for ego, to please you, to get some kind of reaction out of you, to make me feel better, or am I doing this to genuinely carry the message to the addict who still suffers?
Right.
I mean, the addict who's walking in here today with a day clean at his first convention, walks into his first workshop, and gets to hear George L.
Right.
Make no mistake about it. I am here to carry the message to you. I want to make a statement to you that this program works if you work it. This program works if you don't work it. It just won't work for you. The good thing about this is it's Friday afternoon. I get to do this right now, get it out of the way, so I can enjoy myself a kick-ass rock and roll weekend in Ocean City, Maryland. I get it out of my way so I don't have to go the whole weekend with that feeling in my gut, that anxiety about what I'm going to share. And then I don't have to worry about what I'm going to share, what I didn't share. You know, at the end of the weekend, I'm not going to sit there and, you know, look, after I get done sharing, two things always go through my mind. The first one is, damn, I wish I'd have shared that. The second one is, damn, why the fuck did I share that? You know, and look, I don't want to stand up here and be thanking a whole bunch of people like I'm accepting some kind of award or something. But listen, I'm honored and I'm grateful to be up here participating in my own recovery, carrying the message, you know. And I want to thank my sponsee brother and one of my best friends, Manny, who he's my road dog. He travels with me all over the place, man. And you know, Manny is an old hippie. He was at Woodstock. So I listened to Manny, and I learned some shit. And one of the things I learned was the most popular word back in 1969. Do you know what the most popular word back in 1969 was? Ear. 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 Now, you just got the importance of what it means to be in a meeting, right? Because if you listen to that on the tape, you ain't going to get it. You ain't going to get that. They're going to be like, what the fuck was they laughing at? He ain't say no slick shit. I don't get it. And if you're new and you feel like you don't get it, check it out. There is no it to get. Just more work to do. That's all. So, all I want to do is have a good time, sit up here, do it. My friend Bakri, my friend is going to come on after me, and you know, he's going to tear the house down. I know it. He's going to tear the house down. See, I like to put the expectation on the other person in case I stand up here and I get the fucking up. Woo! But let me tell you, any clean addict is a miracle, and like I couldn't think of a better topic. You know, I couldn't think of a better topic. Because number one, it gives us a wide range to share. We were just talking about that. We can pretty much share on anything that we want. I ain't got to, you know, go into the book and study what pages the certain topics on and this and that, and then come in and misquote something for you, and somebody in the back jump up and say, "That ain't what the book says." Listen, I know you're out there. I know you are out there. Check it out, because I done did it. Yeah, what the fuck is he talking about? But the level of the miracle, that like miracle, you know, I don't have the dictionary definition on me. I didn't do all that old crazy shit. But to me, a miracle is simply an act of God. An act of God. And the miracle happened for me when I got clean. Everything else after that was a product of the work that I've done along with you to help make me a better person. The original act was the miracle of getting clean, because I was so entrenched in my addiction that I couldn't let go. It's not like I felt like I didn't have a choice. I didn't know I had a choice. It was just the way. It's just what we did in West Baltimore. You know, it's just what we did without even thinking about it. You know, it had to take something beyond me to get me to stop using drugs. Because despite everything that you do once you get in this program and everything that you work on yourself in the course of following that spiritual path to make you a better person, the fact remains is that I'm in this program because I couldn't stop using drugs. I didn't come to NA just because I couldn't stop jerking off. That happened a couple years later. And oh, we going to get to that. We going to get to that. But, you know, I don't feel like I have to get up here and explain to you what that feeling was like in your gut when you really, really, really didn't want to get high, but you got high anyway. When you got high anyway, when you knew it was wrong, when you were stealing shit and you knew it wasn't right and there was nothing you could do to keep going. Because that nasty ass monster, the disease of addiction, had me in its grips, in its tentacles, and wouldn't let go. You know, and then I set about doing everything that I could to help it kill me. Terrible disease when it gets you to help you kill. Like, you know, you hear some people say, you know, my disease talks to me in my own voice. My disease don't talk to me in my own voice. Number one, because I'm a dummy. Number two, my disease knows that I'm a dummy. So my disease talks to me in like Morgan Freeman's voice and shit. James Earl Jones and shit. Coming at me as a bag of dope. George, I am your father. So there's no way that I can explain the lifting of the obsession to take a hit of crack or to do some dope or to drink a Budweiser, anything else that you did or I did. I can't explain when the moment came. All I know is that looking back on it, woo! I mean like a Ric Flair, woo! Am I glad that it happened? You know, because look, one thing about me and the program that I work, right, is I always learn my lessons after the fact. You know what I mean? It's not like in the middle of the storms that I go through, I'm jumping up and down like, yeah, I know there's something good at the end of this. You know, I'm like crying, like snot bubble coming out of my nose, crying, begging God, asking him, when's it going to end? When's it going to end? You know, and then when it does, when it ends, and you really feel that God has reached in and touched your soul. There can't be no denying that the miracle has taken place in your life the way it took place in mine. Don't come in here telling me that miracles don't happen. Don't tell me that miracles don't happen in this joint. You know, because I am living proof. I am living proof. We were talking about it. We've seen buses coming up to this convention, and you know, everybody's having a good time, and thousands of addicts. And I was telling my little buddy, I was like, damn, if everybody relapsed today, Ocean City would be fucked. Remember that old movie, Escape from New York? That's the type of shit that this would be. You know what I mean? We'd all kill each other over who wants to be the king. Listen, I want to talk about the work that my program has entailed for me to do after that initial miracle has taken place. Right? I'm just being pushed, being told what's going on in my life current day. Because, you know, some things that have happened in my life. Like, I was talking with my sponsor yesterday, and I was talking about how, you know, I love it when people come and ask me to share, you know, but I'm getting to the point that I just don't like to come and do the sharing, you know, because of all the anxiety and this and that. And it's a tough thing. He assures me that I'm growing, right? And you know, I've been on this path for a minute, and I can honestly say that, you know, I'm always the last one to see the growth in me. It seems to be always that one of you got to come out and point it out to me. You know, so many days I'm unhappy with myself, and you know, and he tells me, you know, sometimes you just got to look at yourself through the eyes of someone who loves you. So if nothing else that I've done in this program, and I continue to do, is I surround myself with people who love me. With people who love me. You know, they might not can't stand me sometimes. You know, they might not can't stand me sometimes and talk shit on me and this and that, because that's what we do. That's what we do. But no matter what happens, you know, this is a group of people that ain't going to let each other die. We might let each other hurt a little bit, you know, because that's what we got to do, you know. Carry the message, not the addict. 12-step talks about we can't deny another addict their pain. But we can help them by sharing our experience, strength, and hope with them. But, you know, look, 10 years ago, I was letting another man suck my dick for a $5 hit of crack. Getting clean and working the program. You know, just some wonderful things have happened in my life. Look, unemployable. Today I own my own business. Yeah, and I own a roofing company, right? And I own a business. You know what I mean? It's not an old wooden ladder taped to a pickup truck going around and knocking on doors asking if I can do some jobs for you. I got a business with 7 employees. You know, the grace of God. Also, the mercy of a loving God. Because I should have got some shit that didn't come my way. I got a beautiful wife. Beautiful wife who's in Narcotics Anonymous. We got engaged at a Narcotics Anonymous event. You know, at our wedding, it should have been a clean time countdown. The only people at my wedding who wasn't addicts was some members of her family, and to me, that's questionable too. So listen, you know, I got a wife. I'm 44. I'll be 44 in a couple weeks. She's 32. She's pregnant. We're going to have our first child. Both of us, our first child. You know. And, you know, it's intimidating. It's scary. You know. But beyond all that, I'm excited. You know, I'm not letting the fear get the best of me. Because I got so many people in my life that are going to teach me how to be a father. The same way you taught me how to be a husband. The same way you taught me how to be a son. The same way you taught me how to be a friend. This is my school. This is where I come to get my lessons. This is where, and listen, so my wife is 5 months pregnant. This is where it gets real. My wife is 5 months pregnant, and I feel that she's not doing her wifely duties. You know, I tell her, listen, I remember we stood up for that man, and you agreed to honor and obey me. And look, and she reminds me, no, that's not what the vow said. I took them out on purpose. I knew you was going to bring that shit up later. But anyway, as a husband and her as my wife, I feel like I'm privy to certain things that I'm not getting right now. There comes a problem. Look, I tricked up till 4 years clean. And I don't know about any of you guys, but the prostitutes that I always dealt with and associated with were always using addicts. I could never find one of them Julia Roberts pretty woman type prostitutes. I'm not sure they really exist. You know, I've never met a prostitute who said, yeah, I'm just doing this to work my way through college. You know, all the prostitutes I've been with, make no mistake, they was trying to get one. So listen, that... talking right and living right are two very different things. You know, and I've always been able to talk a good game. You know, but when I wasn't living right, when it got to the point where it was, I wasn't worried about what you was thinking of me. If I worry about what you think of me, I'll always continue the behavior. I didn't stop until I got sick of myself and the things that it was doing to me. So, back to my wife and her negligence. It ain't denial if you know you caught up in it. I know where I'm at. So, these are the things that I tell myself as I'm on my computer when she's at work, dialing up every porn site known to man. I'm doing this because it stops me from going and cheating on my wife. That we justify and rationalize the most outrageous sort of nonsense. My compulsive masturbating is stopping me from going out and being unfaithful to my wife. is what I'm telling myself. And then look, You can only engage in fantasy for so long before temptation becomes inviting to you to step into reality. Now, while I'm on my computer engaging in fantasy, I forgot that my disease was along for the ride. My disease was with me. While I'm online, and my disease is telling me, well, maybe you need some outside help. Some of y'all got that. So now I'm going to the meetings, and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, Terminator. Everybody's a moving target. And I'm allowing myself to engage in the thoughts that I know are going to lead to my destruction. And I entertain them and entertain them and entertain them. And thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, that I don't disassociate myself from you. Thank God that I'm a meeting maker. You know, I don't make one meeting a week. If I make one meeting a week, that means I'm disconnected from you for six. I'm just not the type of addict that can do that. I'm not telling you what you got to do. I'm telling you what works and what don't work for me. So, sharing about it, you know, it's never comfortable to come into a room full of people that you've never seen before and open yourself up and become vulnerable. Because after this, some of you are going to hug me. Some of you are going to love me. Some of you are going to go around the corner and talk about me. But I love you all just the same. You know? So it comes to that point where I got to get sick of the behavior. I got to get sick of what I'm doing to myself before I can make any changes. And, you know, I'd like to end on a happy note and say that, you know, the changes have been made. But as of right now, they're not. As of right now, I'm walking through that storm. I'm walking through that storm where I want to still engage in extracurricular activities. But I can't keep coming in here and telling you I'm some type of person and then go out and act different. I got to learn to keep living what I'm talking. I got to learn to ask for help. Ask for help. So that's the battle I'm fighting, and you know, and the thing is, I always feel, you know, sometimes some of the things that stop me would be like, damn, if I hooked up with her, I would probably come too fast. She'd probably think my penis ain't big enough. You know, these are the things that go through my head. You know, because look, when you engage in that fantasy and you're watching porn, they don't put no actors in there that are inadequate. So now I'm trying to compare myself, you know, and coming up short. Listen, I'm about to make a whole bunch of people in here uncomfortable. Right? Some of y'all are going to be uncomfortable for me. Some of y'all are going to be uncomfortable because you're going to think that I've read your fourth step. But, you know, in comparing, sometimes, every once in a while, might be in a men's room and sneak a peek. They go like, "Dad, I ain't going to the bathroom with George." And Because I know when I'm being controlled by my disease. You know what I mean? And all my life I've been comparing myself to other people. What you look like, what you're wearing, how big you are. This, I always compare myself to you. And no matter what, I always find myself coming up short. You know, instead of working this program, doing the work that's required through the steps, and come in here and start comparing me to myself. Comparing me to who I am now, to the vision of the man that God wants me to be. Because if you want to start talking about the miracle, the greatest miracle is life. Is life. You know, kind of people we are, and it reminds me of an egg. The protective shell and life. And it reminds me of the inside job that's required in Narcotics Anonymous. Because if you take an egg and that egg breaks open from an inside force, life begins. But if that egg is cracked by an outside force, life ends immediately. Narcotics Anonymous is an inside job. It's an inside job. That quest that I'm on for that spiritual awakening. You know, we were talking about it the other night. You know, spiritual awakenings and God's will. You know, what is God's will? You know, and then we got into the IP, another look where it talks about, you know, we don't know, if you don't know what addiction is, we can be comfortable about what addiction isn't. And I took that and I related that to God's will. If you don't always know what God's will is, I can go down the inventory and pretty much figure out what God's will isn't. It's not for me to use drugs. It's not for me to go around hurting people. And the 11th step talks about how God's will for us becomes our own true will for ourselves. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, that still sounds like self-will. You know? But what it is, it becomes less for me about inviting God in and accepting to do His will. It becomes less about inviting God in and more about getting in touch with the God who's already inside of me. Who's already laid the foundation. Who's already started the work on me that I'm not even, that I don't even know I'm going to do yet. And I get caught up and mixed up with God's will and God's purpose. Why am I here? What is God's purpose for me? And I get so caught up in asking myself what God's purpose for me is that along the road, I forget to do God's will while I'm on the search. So all I want to do is have a good time at this convention this weekend. All I want to do is meet some new friends. All I want to do is get a bunch of hugs and tell you all that I love you. So just think back to your worst day when you was using. Your worst day when you was on the floor of Central Booking, throwing up, or when you were stealing your kids' toys and you couldn't stop. And the only prayer that you could think of was, God, please help me. God, please help me. Look around you. You're in Narcotics Anonymous. Your prayers have been answered. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, George. I'm Bill, and I'm still an addict. Let's thank George for sharing. We already did. Thank you. At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker. His name is Bakri from Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Bill. Agnew Bakri. And thank you, George. God damn, George covered a lot, man, you know. But it's keeping it real and setting the tone. This topic at first, you know, you said a lot, especially about this getting, you know, us getting a chance to get this over with and get this done. But any clean article is a miracle. It's pretty general topic, right? I mean, if you look beside you, you look behind you, you look in front of you, you're sitting in a room full of miracles, right? And every one of us has a version of that miracle piece. And for me, y'all, my introduction and my relationship with Narcotics Anonymous goes a long way back. And it's been a rough journey, right, for the most part. But like I say, you know, I got caught up in some things. My story is basically the same addict we use again, right? Recovery and relapse, okay? And like I say, I'll say some little words and some key words, like I came around the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous back in 1987 by way of a methadone program. I drank the meth, and they say you got to go to meetings too, okay? And I go to I drink my meth, and I go to meetings. And well, first of all, let me give proper thanks to the committee for asking me to do this workshop. Like I say, it is a, you know, I think that when we're asked to do these things, we get the most help probably because we get a chance to dig in and find out, soul search, and do what we got to do to find out, you know, how we can convey a message, because that's really what we're being asked to do. If you're asked to share, it's just service work, you know, and I believe in service. But essentially, like I say, the story goes is that I got confused. I came up in here and I got caught up, y'all. I came in here, I got caught up and it looked good, right? It was, you know, I didn't learn until later that, you know, y'all said the same act we use again. That meant I had to do some changing. Like this process requires change. It calls for a profound change. And we say if the drugs don't kill you, lifestyle will. So I got caught up in it, look good, and social acceptability and all of that. And I thought that the things I could do for myself on the outside would make me feel better on the inside. And the thing is, I could never get enough of nothing. Okay, it was insidious. It was tricky. It was baffling because it was just like a process where I got back into hustling while I was going to meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. And children, please do not try this at home. Okay. It's a sad state of affairs in your soul. When you mentioned it, George, about talking clean and living dirty. Because I could perpetrate. I could come up in here and get my hugs and I could do this. And I was one. Look, it is what it is. I come around. I drop names about who I was associated with in the program. You know, I make all the the N.A. go-go's and I make all the N.A. picnics and I get in all the N.A. photographs of the go-go pose. You know what I'm saying? But for real, it's an inside job. You know, I was probably an illusion of recovery, you know. So as the story goes, somewhere along the way, I had a disease that really wanted to get me by myself so it can take over. Right? It wasn't a matter if, it was just a matter of when. Like I say, you know, it was a methodical sort of progression to me getting caught in lifestyle. He said, the drugs don't kill you, lifestyle will. And so it was like, man, first, can you help me get this apartment? Then it was, man, can you help me get this car? Go downtown, take care of this business. I got ego. I went on swole. Ego went on swole. Go take care of this business. Then it got to, man, can you help me count some money? I really went on swole. You know, then I was already caught up by time. It was, man, can you move this joint from one place to another? So I'm caught up. But then it took like 4 years. I'm saying it took me 4 years to say, damn, you know, I really don't sell this shit. You know. And and I sat on the end of the bed and I took me a one-on-one and dope. And that was devastating. I don't know if anybody's ever experienced that feeling. Some of us have. Yeah. With a significant amount of clean time. You know, and then that feeling comes over when you use, bam! What the fuck have I done? First of all, my clean time is gone. Now, the addict that I am, I got caught up in ego and some other defects like foolish pride, right, self-reliance and all that shit. So I had just enough going, including the money that I had made, to not come in here and tell y'all what I had done. Right? And I thought instead of copping in D.C., I'd go to Baltimore and cop and y'all won't know what's going on. Y'all already knew. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, like I said, right up there with my mother passing away, that had to be one of the most confusing, loneliest, craziest despairing feelings I ever felt, man. You know, was losing my clean time because I knew I had lost y'all, you know. Then that began a run that ran for 7 years, man. I'm talking about I took that state-of-the-art, up close and personal, ass Timberland ass whipping for 7 years, right? Now it didn't start out like that. It worked. I started out with a whole lot of stuff, you know. But when I took that blow, that shit was like spot removal. You know, shit. Remove the car wash, remove the house. It got bad, man. You know, it got bad. You know, shit. I mean, I knew it was probably really time to get help. I was using the bathroom, went to pull my underwear up, and didn't nothing come up but the waistband. You know, it shredded apart, wearing a thong. You know what I mean? Damn. You know, shit funny now. It wasn't funny then, guys. But, I'm saying shit's bad, man. You know, but the degradation, you know, and the desperation at bottom, right? Because my disease has a way of telling me something that I'm not, right? And by this time, it had told me that it was getting near the end, and it was telling me that I was a pharmacist, and I was writing. I hadn't been to school for that. You know, but I was writing scripts for Class 3 narcotics. And Fairfax County Police said, "Well, we're going to show you what happened to the last pharmacist that was here." And they gave me 90 days, right? And by the way, George, thank you for setting such a good tone to the meeting, because we believe in laughter, right? Because it's good medicine for us, right? We done been sad long enough, y'all. You know, and I believe in having myself a good ass time. I mean, goddamn, if I got clean to be as miserable as I was when I was using, right? So I'm about having some fun, man. It's about living now. And so, you know, the interesting thing about that arrest was that I'm trained, well trained, that when, you know, the police come, we break. Something happened that time. I just sat there. I almost wanted to say, what took y'all so long? I don't know if y'all relate to what I'm talking about, man. I'm talking about being so fucking tired. You just want to sit down somewhere. That's why I love Narcotics Anonymous. We got chairs in here. Because it was time for me to just sit my ass down somewhere. You know, I'm talking about y'all can relate to being just tired, man. Just tired of that day in and day out trying to get one, man. You know, lies and rest, you know, all the stealing and all that stuff. But I didn't have a clue that this was going to be my last time using, y'all. I'm talking about February 28th, 2000, if it's ever any one thing. If we're talking about miracles, to me, that was the time that ultimately the miracle really took place as far as getting clean was concerned, because that was my last day using. And it was in jail. I didn't have a great detox or nothing, but, you know, it worked over there in Fairfax County, and something happened, right? Something happened in that 90 days. It was time for me to go home, man. I said those three words, you know. Well, I knew something had changed when I didn't want to leave at midnight, right? Because, you know, when you get ready, like, you can go home at midnight. When it's at 12:01, you can get out. But I asked him, can I stay the next morning, get somebody to pick me up? So something was beginning to change right there. But I had to walk from Fairfax to D.C. to get me one, you know what I'm saying? So I'm saying something was changing, you know. But I don't know, y'all. You know, the miracle starts to happen because we talk about how, you know, we have a feeling disease. You know, a feeling disease that lives in our thinking, right? Well, it was mostly cliche in the beginning, but as time went on, I began to understand what it was talking about, right? You know, it was just some fundamental things that I had to learn. Look, if you got diabetes or you got high blood pressure, there's some things you got to learn. If you want to live, you got to learn how to, HIV, you got to learn how to live with them things, right? So I had to learn what the hell was wrong with me, you know? And so I got to learn about, you know, my self-centeredness, and that's why I was so spiritually dead. That's why I didn't want to take part. Nothing outside of my 3-block radius did I want any part of. That was my world, right? And I'm saying that to say that it was, you know, that when I was in there, y'all, I don't know what happened, man. I started watching these, you know, you mentioned some things, George, but I started watching programs like The Wedding Story. And the baby story, right? And I felt these feelings starting to come over me because I missed out on all that woo and court and proposal on one knee and all that shit. I missed out on proms. I missed out on all that shit down 7th Street, right? So I'm just saying, you know, And then the baby, that's a wonderful thing when they sit, they go in the room and watch the baby being born now. You know, and it's a glorious occasion. So I'm starting to come in here with these hard-ass dudes, and I got them watching this stuff. You know, but I realized that my feelings were starting to come back. You know, I was starting to feel something again, you know. And Jordan, when I got out, man, I said those three words you mentioned. God help me. And I had called my sister like a day before, right, and told her that I was about to come home. She said, God damn, you about to come home already? You know what I'm saying? Some people have to get some sleep at night. You know what I'm saying? And, man, look, they came and got me, man. I ain't had nothing. I remember that smell. See, is there anything I don't want to forget? I don't want to forget that last day Houston, y'all. I don't want to forget the feelings. I don't want to forget the loneliness, the desperation, the confusion, you know, the fear. I don't want to forget none of that. But it's just something happened in that transition that I was ready to try something different, right? I ain't have a clue that my life would be anything like it was now, right? The best I could come up with was that I'm waiting to die. These youngers gonna finally kill my ass for stealing their shit, right? Or either I'm gonna finally get enough of something strong enough to go ahead and OD. That's where I was. But we say what? If you wanna make God laugh, make plans, right? Because look, I the best I can come up with, look, I need long-term treatment. And I told my folks that. So I need long-term treatment. They say, okay, you see what you can find over Virginia, we're gonna see what we can find out here in D.C. I'm going to tell you, you talk about willing, right? We talk about being very willing. And I was locked up with like 90% Hispanic guys. I was willing to stay in Virginia and learn how to speak Spanish if I had to. Next time y'all saw me, I'd be Julio or somebody, because I was tired. And just a few things occurred to me. Look, I don't have nowhere else to go but back to the same places I was. Fundamental things cropped up. So they say, you teach people how to treat you. They said, okay, we got something for you. You know, they picked me up, and Tuesday morning rolled around. They wasn't doing the intake till Tuesday morning. We were riding up Kenilworth Avenue. They never told me where I was going. They said, you're going to the ARC. I said, what the hell is that? They said, it's the Salvation Army. We go up here and make a donation. The donation is your ass. So they took me up there, dropped me off, didn't even ask for a receipt. The ass was gone, right? I mean, they had been through this drill before, dropping me off somewhere. And see me right back on the corner 2 days later or less, you know. So I'm just saying, you know, but that's when, you know, H&I was coming in, man, you know. And they was bringing me. I had some familiarity with the program because I had been here before. That's the amazing thing, man. And I came here and I got this information. We talk about desire, a desire to stay clean, right, or to get clean in the program. And I had it and I lost it. Because I got a disease that's insidious. Now, George, I bought my books, okay? But I'm not going to quote without the books. I want to make sure I read what's right in the books, okay? And I just got a couple little things outlined here that I thought was pretty essential for this workshop, right? The first one is in What Can I Do, Chapter 5, okay? Our disease involves much more than just using drugs, so our recovery must involve much more than simple abstinence. Recovery is an active change in our ideas and our attitudes. Well, what the hell did I have to change? Everything, right? I didn't understand what my will in my life was at first. It's the way I think and the way I behave, you know? So this has been a progression. This has been an opportunity for me to continue to grow in the process of recovery, you know? The time came when I had to leave there, and, you know, I got a place, good, decent place to live. I got a job. A job got a 401k. I ain't know what a 401k. I thought it was some kind of charge I ain't never caught or something. You know what I'm saying? Then I got diagnosed with Hep C, you know. The doctor told me you need to go and get a support group to help you manage your Hep C. I went to a meeting. I shared that I had Hep C. At the end of the meeting, I got mobbed with people with experience with Hep C. So I'm continuing to talk about the miracle of recovery and what happens in here, right? This is beyond my wildest dream. I don't claim a lot of material wealth or anything of that nature. I save my money. I got cheap, right? But the thing I like to do is get on airplanes and go to world conventions and stuff. Now, I'm talking about the same addict, man. We're talking about a miracle, man, was when I found myself on a beach in Waikiki in 05, right, at the World Convention in Hawaii. I'm saying, here, I got something to compare this with. I'm going from Hawaii, from handcuffs, I mean, to Hawaii, right? I mean, only this program could have afforded me that. And then if I go outside of me, I say, God damn, you know, I got siblings. You know, my parents are deceased, right? I got siblings and stuff. And my sisters used to tell me, you know, we need our brother. I ain't have a clue what they was talking about, right? You know, my children, you know, they would get joned on and had to be disgraced because I was somewhere dirty looking, right, and stuff like that. So it didn't just benefit me. The miracle just didn't happen with me, but it happened to ones closest to me, the ones that I hurt most when I was used, you know. And like I say, you know, I mean, you know, that thing about any clean miracle is an addict. Come on, y'all. You know, that's coming in the door. You know, a lot of things can happen when we stop copping. You know, first thing, we start shopping. You know, so we get things, but then we find out that that's just, you know, what comes along with it. But the most valuable thing is priceless. That I can come into my own, right? That I get to understand some things about myself that I never would have before. You know, I mean, it got mentioned earlier by George that, you know, perpetrating a fraud goes way back. I can remember the first time, you know, pulled a little caper, stole the money off the ice cream truck. We ran in the movie, happened to be Goldfinger, James Bond. Like, shit, I came out that moment, I thought I was James Bond. You know, oh yes, I was looking for pussy galore. But I'm just saying, you know, all those masks, all those mental obsessions I had about, you know, what I should be, you know. But the thing is learning some spiritual principles, man. Like, you know, just give me so much freedom in this process, you know. I love Narcotics Anonymous, man. Some beautiful things have happened, man. I get to go back to the same daggone facility I was in and take a meeting with H&I. You know, that's a gift. That's a gift, man. You know, at my home group, I'm on the setup crew, right? I kind of got stuck there, but I like to go down there and make sure the chairs are set up and the coffee is made and all that stuff like that. You know, we got a step study, you know, because we can't just stop. You know, I can't just stop there with getting clean. Y'all say it all the time. Getting clean and staying clean is two different things. The process is a character building process. You know, by the way, Narcotics Anonymous, characters welcome. There's plenty of us in here, right? You know, but I'm saying the step process just put me in touch with so many different things that I would never have been privy to, never aware of, right? And the 11th step, y'all, you know, because all of us, you know, one of the things I thought about, and I think that this topic alludes to, is that, look, man, in this program, it's some rich ass addicts. I mean, it's some addicts who come in here, they are disciplined, they make sacrifices, they go back to school, they become workaholics, they hustle their ass off, not illegitimately. Hustle is defined as work, right? And I mean, they make immense progress in their lives, right? Get businesses, stuff, right? But I'm saying, oh, that's not going to be all of our story, right? But all of us have certain entitlement just by being members of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Number one, we get a whole lot of love up in here. Oftentimes, man, a cry for help when we got a newcomer, right, or somebody coming in, you know, is a request for love. Because that's what happens to this addict when I go to a meeting. Because the boogaboos of life, the weariness, the knockdown, drag-out struggle of everyday living is going to weigh you down. So this addict takes his ass to a meeting, and like I say, I'm glad we got chairs, and I just sit my ass down, and I get me one of those ah moments. I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about. Just get one of those ah moments, right? Where I for that time, I know I'm safe, right? And I can get my love tank filled up a little bit. You know, because I start with the hugs, man. Look, one of the services at my home group is a greeter. You know, and if the greeter ain't there, I'm jumping over there. You know what I'm saying? Because you need to get a hug. Come on, y'all know what happens to us a lot of times. We get the narcotics. Now, one of my favorite things when I walk in a meeting is, all my friends are here, and I ain't bullshitting. All my friends are here, because that was the biggest thing in the beginning. I got to get me some new friends that ain't using, ain't selling, right? I got to get me some people to be around that want to do the same thing I'm doing, because I don't stand a chance with them down on the corner, right? I know what I'm going to do if I go down there, right? I'm clear on that, you know. And so, you know, we have a tendency a lot of times to click up. Because, man, I ain't seen you since the last home group last week. So, you know, but then, bam, here come a newcomer walking in the door and get missed, right? And I think that's one of our most vulnerable times, man, when we show up. And I think that, you know, that thing speaks volumes, man, when we step to a newcomer and give them a hug, right? Now, on that same note, that all of us are not going to have big-time wealth or whatever, right? And by the way, back in the old school, we used to say that in here you can have a castle or a hut. Now, the best I could come up with was that means how well you have done, you know, materially or, you know, monetarily or whatever like that. But then I had, you know, we say everything that we know is subject to revision, especially what we know about the truth, right? And I'm saying that to say that when I revised that piece, it was like this spiritual castle or this spiritual hut, right? Because that's how it is when I'm in a rut. It's like a spiritual hut, you know? But most of the time, y'all, I'm firing on all cylinders. It's good, you know? Now, I'm going to end with this piece right here. I got a little more time. Okay, we see, and this is in step 11, right? We see that regardless of the presence or absence of material success in our lives, we can be content. We can be happy and fulfilled with or without money, with or without a partner, with or without the approval of others. We begin to see that God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh, and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. Okay? And that's the contentment that, you know, I've been able to come up on as a result of just doing the program on a regular basis, talking to my sponsor, doing step work, you know, service work. You know, I love service because it gives me a chance to give back, right? I never understood how, it used to baffle me at first how, you know, we keep what we have by giving it away was such a big thing until I got in a position where I could give back, you know. I have children, you know, I've had some issues with, you know, my daughters in my life. My youngest daughter was put up for adoption because of active addiction. She decides when she gets a certain age and she wants to seek me and her mother out, she can do that, right? But I do my best not to keep my foot in my ass about things like that. You know, they happened. And the best thing I can do is keep doing what I'm doing so that if she should decide to find me when she gets 18, that I can be the best representative or the best father that I can possibly be, you know. But like I say, aside from that, you know, I just love the program of Narcotics Anonymous because, I mean, like I said, I didn't have a clue, man, of where this journey would take me. And now, y'all, since I am something, they used to call me literature quoting, cliche quoting, but that's gotten better over the years. And this is our new book, right? And, you know, like, for those of you all who have had, like, lots of clean time and, you know, wondering about some of the issues that occur because aging, if you stay clean, and, you know, one of the side effects of staying clean is you're going to get older, you know? And that's what happens, you know? So this book is really talking a lot about that, you know? And this is in a new way of life because this is a new way of life. I ain't have a clue about this when I got here, right? It says, and stay with me on this if you can. Our relationship with the world is a reflection of our relationship with ourselves. In other words, it's important how I relate to my job, to you all, and stuff. You know, how do I relate to myself? If I'm pissed off at myself all the time, it's pretty likely I'm going to be pissed off at you. It's going to be hard to get a breakthrough, right? We are open to new ideas, it says. New ways of thinking. New ways of seeing what we think we know. Now, here goes. Trusting people who believe in us allows us to try new things, even when they seem frightening. So just because I get some clean time and I do a little work, it don't mean that I'm still not going to encounter some things that's going to shake me up. I'm still going to get shook up. I was scared as shit and I got an evaluation at my job the other day. I went in there and it was wonderful. I'm like, who the hell are they talking about? You know what I'm saying? You know, but like I said, I go to work to work. Old man told me a long time ago, either you're going to work hard or you're going to work hard trying not to work. So I decided, you know, it makes the day go faster when I decide to work. Right? It says, and then about trusting people who believe in us allows us to try new things even when they seem frightening, and to have faith that the changes we see are real. Man, sometimes, man, this shit blows my mind. I have to wonder if it's really real, if it's really happening. Okay? Now, this piece gets into stability. Now, stay with me for a minute. Our sense of stability within ourselves allows us to take greater risk. George mentioned being vulnerable. Sometimes our vulnerability can be our greatest asset, taking the risk to jump on out there, right? Whether that means being willing to pursue a new career or to put our hearts on the line with someone we love. That's big for me. I struggle with the pornography thing too, right? I rationalize safe sex, right? I'm watching game films. I'm practicing. I'm getting ready. Oh, I'm going to try that. No. But the idea is that it's rationale. Outrageous rationale. Okay? Whether that means being willing to pursue a new career or to put our hearts on the line with someone we love. When we learn to trust that stability, we can let go a little more. We no longer spend our days or nights worrying or wishing that it will all go away. I'm so afraid to show up. Here's what a member quotes. I'm so afraid to show up and grow up that I dream of running away and starting over, leave it all behind. We fear security. We don't quite trust that we are capable of sustaining it. Staying with the process of our lives without creating upheaval and drama can be a new experience for us. You know, I love drama, you know. Stability is important for us to thrive, but there is a difference between being stable and being stuck. It may be that we stop moving forward because we have arrived at a destination. Now, here's the part about the fruit of the labor, right? Of course, we want to enjoy the fruits of our labor, but we run the risk of enjoying that fruit until it rots. No, we ride that boat too long, right? When I got clean, here's a quote from the member. When I got clean, it was relatively easy for me to make a transition to a normal lifestyle, said one member. But fear of change kept me paralyzed there. We have a hard time. Here you go. We have a hard time distinguishing between a niche or a ditch. Right? And this in this book. If any of you know, it really speaks to us. It really nourishes us. And they started a new meeting in our area called Living Clean, The Journey Continues, right? And I've been making it regularly because I want more, y'all. If it's good, I want more, you know? I'm so glad. I'm grateful for a lot of things. I'm grateful for clean underwear. I'm grateful for a job, right? You know, I wasn't taking no baths when I got here. You know, wasn't buying no soap. Shit. Only time I bought soap when I got beat. You know what I'm saying? No, y'all never bought no soap, right? But it is what it is, y'all. And I'm going to shut down because, you know, I'm starting to ramble up here. But I'm saying it's been a wonderful workshop. It's been fun. And I'm like, George, man, look, I'm going to end with this piece right here, y'all. Look, when I first got clean, it was this man. He had this pool, and he had this pool party. And I mean, y'all can imagine, middle of July. Man, these beautiful ass women running around with these bikinis on and thong and every look, non-alcoholic beverages, right? Music, good dinner mug, DJ, and a band, right? In the pool, wasn't nobody in the pool. He had everything in that pool: alligators, crocodiles, electric eels, sharks, anything that'll eat your ass alive was in that pool. Nobody would go in there. Now, you know, we get clean, we get a little eccentric. You know, we have these weird things going on with us, right? So this joker got a $10,000 prize for anybody that can swim across the pool. Nobody got in the pool. All of a sudden, the potty was going up. Some said splash. Some said choo 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 choo. Dude had made it across the pool. And they ran over to him and they got him out. And he was huffing and puffing. He said, "Man, you just won $10,000. He said, "Never mind them $10,000. Just show me the motherfucker that pushed me in the pool." Now, the moral of that story is, it was a miracle that he made it across that pool, right? It's like it was a miracle that your ass made it to Narcotics Anonymous, that we made it, right? And that's enough out of me. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, I'm Bill and I'm an addict.
We have a few minutes left.